TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that, so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do in your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let TruGreen take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn, while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. Get started today by visiting TruGreen.com. Because we all love a beautiful lawn, but not all the work that it takes to maintain it. So, you do you. Let TruGreen do your lawn care. Visit TruGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed. You can trust TruGreen to give you the best lawn because they're the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Visit TruGreen.com today. That's TruGreen.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Freaking First Cut! Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your DFS preview for this week's PGA Championship. See, I'm trying to keep my excitement a little bit tempered. I am in the media center, so I'm trying not to yell, but I am quite excited for this event.
Can you believe this show off? Just dropping media center right off the bat. I can't even believe it. Well, I am not in the media center, but I really am excited for you. I just saw some pictures you put out on Twitter. You had some analysis there on Twitter, just related some basic stuff relating to the course and the rough and what you saw from players who were practicing from those places. I am super intrigued by this tournament for so many different reasons. Yes, it's a major. Live guys are back. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. We'll talk about all of that and then some. There's another reason to be excited, Cian. I think this really is something that, you know, you and I keep track of is when the industry starts to make progress, and golf has been very slow on making progress in our world, the fantasy, the betting side of things. And just being here this week, looking at the PGA Championship website, they have made their fantasy game front and center. So I'll describe their fantasy game in just a second, but the idea that, you know, we are just 5 years removed from, you know, the Supreme Court allowing sports betting to be legalized, and that's different from fantasy, but most organizations have moved very, very slowly. No longer. The PGA of America is leaning into this right now.
As well they should, because the part of the reason golf is popular, at least right now among some people, is the DFS part of it and in the gambling part. That's not to take anything away from golf, the sport itself. But listen, we have to be real here. There is a lot of people where they were already interested to some degree, but this just ramps it up even more when it comes to the betting stuff, when it comes to the DFS stuff. So to turn a blind eye to that, whether you're the PGA or the NBA or the NFL, it would just be such a poor move. So I'm really happy to see this progress.
So the PGA Championship, they have a PGA Championship fantasy game. You choose from different categories of players. Like, you're going to choose from some of the top guys. You're going to choose from, you know, maybe a European player or an international player. And you're going to choose from one of the 20 club pros that qualified for this event. And you're going to put a lineup together. You can compete with your friends. You can win prizes. You can do it at pgachampionship.com/fantasy or through the official PGA Championship app. I was messing around with this earlier, Sia. You know, it is very much like game theory. You look at, you know, players to focus on or something like that, and you're like, okay, well, I can assume most people are going to want some access to Rom and Rory and Scotty. So there's a level of game theory that I already found myself jumping into on it.
Which is what we're going to discuss on this DFS show, because, you know, and we'll get to it in a couple of minutes, but I mean, guys like John Rahm, it's hard to fade them coming in to what we've seen like over the last few months. And Scottie Scheffler is certainly in that conversation as well. So just from a pure game theory standpoint, and I'm excited to see where ownership goes. And I know Rick Rungood will have ownership among other outfits, but just to see where that ownership lies with guys like John Rahm and maybe some popular names that are just going to be deemed super great value. It's going to be interesting to see quote where the collection areas are.
So you'll choose a past champion, a player over the age of 30, a player under the age of 30, and one of the 20 club pros that qualified for this event. We will have a group. I believe we will be able to invite others into it. So that's one of the big things. You can create groups, play with your friends. I know we will be in one, Sia. So you and I will battle it out with everybody else on the first cut. I'm hoping we're going to get an opportunity to share that with everyone, but I will have to have Josh or Troy tell me what the answer to that question is actually going to be.
Let me put you on the spot and ask you a question. So would it be advisable for me to download the PGA Championship app just to be able to access the game, or you don't necessarily need to do that?
So you can download it through the app, or you can get it at pgachampionship.com/fantasy. You can get it on both the website and the mobile app. So very, very cool stuff there. Let's talk about the golf course. And Troy, if you could share my screen, that would be great. I will say, you know, this is my website, rickrungood.com. The key stats and everything you see come from there. But, you know, I spent all day at Oak Hill today. I can just tell you what I saw out there. Sia, I don't necessarily need to dive into the data as much. Mm-hmm. Let me start by saying it's a very fair golf course. Okay, it's very fair. If you hit a good shot, you're going to be rewarded. If you hit a bad shot, you're going to be punished for it. I think that's part one. It will be hard. Yes. It will be long. Yes. Playing out of any bunker is really going to stink. Playing out of fairway bunkers, depending on where you're at in that fairway bunker, might be a half a shot penalty. Everybody's going to be playing out of the rough. The fairways are not necessarily wide enough. Some spots, they're only 20 yards wide. And the rough, 1 yard off the fairway is the same as 25 yards off the fairway.
Wow.
It is going to be a complete test. It's going to be very fair. I believe it's going to be pretty difficult. I'm excited about it.
You know, I wonder, because of what you said about the fairways and the rough in particular, are, you know, and I think this is a kind of a consistent theme so far, but are we looking for, I mean, obviously having a fairway finder is great if you have the length as well, but are we kind of looking for guys that can bomb it? I mean, I hate to get into a lazy narrative, but it just sounds to me like that's a pretty good way to start. Not to exclusively go there, but a pretty good way to start.
Yeah, for sure. The lazy narrative would be to stop after saying that driving distance is going to matter, because you are going to need to be very stout on your second shot. Your short game, I mean, you're going to miss a lot of greens around here. You're going to miss a lot of fairways. You're going to miss a lot of greens. You're going to need to have a stout short game. You're going to need to make putts for par. Again, it's going to be a true test. It's just easy to say you're going to need distance, which you will, but we can't stop there. You know, I watched a lot of guys hit out of the rough second shot wise, and it seemed very, very unpredictable. You know, there were most guys that I saw left a shot significantly short. They kind of just whiffed it. It was not jumping out of the rough in the way that they thought they would. It was obviously then not coming out with any spin. They were trying to bounce it up there, but it was usually coming up. I mean, it just seems very, very unpredictable. You know, I found the rough for this Monday to not be particularly long yet, but it is thick and it is unpredictable. So the ability to judge that second shot is what I saw give the top players in the world fits all day long today.
Yeah, and I think just based on what you said and just kind of knowing the dynamic here at Oak Hill, I mean, one thing, I kind of say this almost every show, as far as global stats, you know, I like to look at weighted tee to green, weighted in particular, but tee to green, I think that's going to matter here quite a bit. Off the tee, obviously, distance you're going to want to look at, and then approach as well. I'm kind of looking at all of those from a weighted standpoint, but I think the weighted tee to green certainly integrates some of that. The ARG that we're going to probably be leaning on a little bit. I usually, just so everybody knows, I usually kind of have that a little lesser in my DFS analysis than maybe some people, even at courses where you know it's going to be required, because I think ARG lends itself to a certain bit of randomness. But I'll say this, weighted tee to green is certainly going to factor that in.
The other thing that I will say is that I will also look at, like, which I don't normally do, but I think this is a pretty good spot for it, looking at like past history in major championships. You know, a lot of major championships, especially the U.S. Open and the PGA Championship, they do, you know, par is such a good score at times, and the ability to just like make par, the ability to have this well-rounded game, you start to see the same names pop up often. And I think this golf course is truly going to be a major championship test where you see guys like Xander always near the top of the leaderboard, whether he wins or not, right? You know, these guys that are constantly up there, it's because they are so well-rounded, I think is important too, man, because I'll tell you what, major championships punish you for missing on the wrong side. And if you miss on the wrong side here, it's going to be big trouble. So just the ability to miss in the correct spots, to navigate, to manage the golf course, something that does end up being a trait at a lot of different majors, I actually think is pretty valuable this week.
Yeah, that completely makes sense. 100%. I love it.
All right, let's continue this conversation by talking about some names. We'll go through the pricing from the most expensive to the least expensive. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Did you know that more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain? Those numbers do not add up to me, and I know it can be confusing, the biomechanics of the foot, the bones, the muscles, everything in between, but solving foot pain is simple, and that's where Superfeet comes into play. These Superfeet insoles go into your shoes, give your feet comfort and support where they need it the most, and redistribute the forces that reduce both stress and strain through your entire body, not just your feet. Insoles have been phenomenal for me personally, and they are clinically proven to decrease fatigue, reduce injury, and improve comfort. I can attest to that myself, especially when walking a lot of golf holes that I play. So if you feel good, you play good, you look good, everything works out from there, and it starts from the bottom up. Visit superfeet.com and enter promo code FIRST at checkout for 15% off your first order plus free shipping. It's a really fine line creating workout clothes that are great in the gym and workout clothes that are also great to look at outside the gym. And Vuori has threaded that needle. They are designed to work out in, but they don't look like it. They don't feel like it. And it's incredibly comfortable stuff, whether you are running, training, swimming, doing yoga, running errands, lounging around the house. It really doesn't matter. These are versatile clothes. You'll find me often in the men's Sunday performance jogger because I like the jogger situation that goes on down at the bottom, but they're very comfortable. They've got a little bit of a shorter inseam, so they're not as bulky as other pants or other joggers that I have seen out there, and I've really enjoyed how they work both in and out of the gym. So now, here's what you can do for our listeners. First-time purchasers are getting 20% off. All you have to do is go to Vuori.com/first. That's Vuori.com/first. Again, not only will you receive 20% off your first order, but enjoy free shipping on any US orders over $75. And here's my favorite part, free returns. Yeah, go check it out. Vuori.com/first and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
All right. So obviously I'm already here on site. Kyle gets in here shortly. We are going to have some fun extra coverage from the golf course. We'll be on CBS Sports HQ. We'll be doing our podcast live from here with round by round recap. So we've got a little extra planned for this week, Sia, that hopefully everybody is very excited about.
I love that. I'm looking forward to that. I love when you guys are sort of on location in operating out of the CBS studios or what have you on location, because it's a really cool look. And by the way, you know, we do a show that does incorporate DFS and betting, and it's always nice to have somebody or multiple people that are actually there, because maybe we can get a few secrets filtered to us on Twitter. So they're not really secrets after all.
It really is a big difference being on site. So happy that I'm here, and I'll be out doing a lot of watching golf tomorrow as well. So let's look at this. Here we go. This is the pricing on DraftKings. This is the cheat sheet on rickrungood.com. John Rahm $11,400. Scotty Scheffler, 11-2. Rory McIlroy, 10-7. Colin Morikawa, 10-3. And Brooks Koepka, 10-1. So this is the five most expensive golfers on the slate. All certainly well-deserved, but you cannot have all of these guys, Sia. We've got to start making decisions. It's the big three and then some.
I love how, and I know why this is the case, because pricing came out early because it's a major, but I love how you already have projected ownership on here. If you're listening to this podcast, that's great. But if you're not watching us on YouTube, I mean, you are missing a little bit of an element here of what we can see with RRG.com. And listen, the cool thing about the ownership game is that when stuff comes out early, we know what happens. There's like a pivot to the pivot to the pivot because people see things a little bit earlier than they move, and then they move again because we have so many days to kind of absorb this data. What's really interesting to me here, and again, initial ownership projections, so this will definitely change. Two things are interesting to me here. I think the gap between Jon Rahm and Scottie Scheffler is big enough. I don't think it's huge, but I think it's big enough so that I'm a little surprised that even though Scottie Scheffler is cheaper by $200, that there's not a wider gap from an ownership standpoint. And I suspect what we're going to end up seeing, at least between those two, is a wider gap than 1%. I think it's going to end up being maybe 5-6% when it's all said and done. And what also surprises me is that Colin Morikawa, who I think will be the lowest owned guy in this range, is similar to Brooks Koepka, who I think people are going to want to play as sort of a big game hunter and all of those accolades we could assign to him. Colin Morikawa is kind of the opposite right now. So I think that'll change too. Brooks will go up a little bit. Colin will come down a little bit. My favorite in this range, Rick, is Jon Rahm, and it's not particularly close. Obviously, Scottie Scheffler has something to say about that. It's just one tournament. I was a little discouraged by his putting last week, and that's nothing new with him. He's been kind of flat with the putter. We don't usually have to worry about that with Jon Rahm. So if it's just going to be a $200 difference, and if ownership's going to be at least in the range of being similar, it's Jon Rahm all the way for me.
Yeah, I've planted my flag in Scottie Scheffler this week, but if you want to play Rahm, Scheffler, Rory, no problem there. I do agree with you that Brooks Koepka, this ownership, so it's very early on a Monday. I haven't projected right now at about 11% to Rory's 16, Scottie's 23, Jon Rahm's 24. I think you're right that's going to come up. It is kind of an awkward price though for both Morikawa and Brooks. I think there's a clear big three that everyone is pointing out at the top, and then to get the savings of going down to Cantlay and Xander and Finau and JT is very appealing for a lot of people, maybe even starting their lineups there, that the bottom of the 10K range does create a little bit of a quandary. But I think, as you say, these ownership projections, they get more and more aware as the week goes on. I think Brooks Koepka will continue to rise. He's been playing great golf, obviously the win in Orlando on LIV, and then he has a great run at the Masters, and he's been playing great golf on LIV since then. So it makes sense that I think we're going to catch some Brooks steam here over the course of the next couple of days.
Yeah, I agree with that. What's interesting about Colin, though, is that the one thing I'll say about a superstar that's slumping, and we've said this before, is that they can turn it on at any given moment. And I'm not willing to say, well, Colin Morikawa's completely lost it. We're not going to see it till like next year. I don't know when we're going to see it. And that's because he is a superstar. And I think he can find his game pretty much immediately. Now, he's not a super long guy. Doesn't seem like a good course fit. But more importantly, given that this is a DFS show, nobody's going to want to play Colin at 10,300. Like, nobody. I'm actually surprised this number right now is over 10%. I think it'll probably be at 10%, maybe even a touch lower. We'll see how that plans out. But I think Morikawa, at least from a game theory standpoint, is a pretty solid play because you're right. It's going to be Jon Rahm. It's going to be Scottie Scheffler. It's going to be Rory in that order from an ownership standpoint. Brooks is going to pick up a little steam because he's Brooks Koepka. And Colin gets left out because, Rick, like you said, people don't mind starting with Xander. People don't mind starting with Cantlay. Maybe they're going to want to pair Xander and Cantlay together, but they're not going to pair Morikawa and Cantlay, for example, or Morikawa and Xander. So I think that's an interesting way, at least to get different if you're doing multiple lineups.
Yeah, and I just don't envision a scenario in which Colin Morikawa gets more popular between now and Thursday, right? I just don't think anything is really going to drive that ownership. We'll round this out here by talking about Rory McIlroy, who is the third portion of that big three, the missed cut at the Masters, the T47 at the Wells Fargo Championship. Level of concern, state of the union on Rory McIlroy, where do we stand here?
I don't play Rory a lot, and I haven't regretted it as of late. I mean, this is one of those situations where I'm off of Rory unless his ownership's going to be really low. And I can already tell you that's not going to be the case. It's going to be a middling ownership, probably in a similar range to where it is now, in that 16 to 20% range. And I just would rather just pay up for John Rahm at higher ownership, or pay down to something contrarian, like starting my lineup, which this isn't contrarian, but starting my lineup with like two 9K guys, for example, or actually doing the contrarian thing and starting my lineup with Colin Morikawa and a guy in the 9K range.
I understand this means nothing on a Monday in a practice round, and all of these guys hit shots that are insane, but I watched Rory McIlroy hit a couple of just like nasty shots today, and it always gets the juices flowing, right, on a Monday, and you're like, oh, Rory's looking good, everything's fine. But they all look pretty good on Mondays. It's the Sundays that I am generally worried about. So that 10K range, Sia, just to kind of put a bow on this, the way that I see this going, you know, a race to the top for John Rahm and Scottie Scheffler to be one of the higher owned golfers on the slate. I see a little bit of steam coming for Brooks Koepka. The natural pivot being to Colin, if you can kind of stomach it. I think it's interesting. You know, you said like an underperforming superstar. It's like, yeah, he has, but like there are plenty of good finishes in here, right? He's got a handful of top five or six finishes. We've seen spurts of really, really good play. I'm obviously a little bit concerned about him as well, but it's just been a bizarre year for him.
Yeah. I mean, the T10 at the Masters is at least, I mean, in my opinion, it's encouraging. It's probably not where Colin wanted to finish, but it's not like he's been a disaster as of late. I mean, obviously, I mean, missing the cut at the Wells Fargo was not great. T31 at the RBC Heritage, not great. But again, the Masters was just in April. We're not that far removed from seeing at least flashes of the old Colin Morikawa with the ball striking. And again, it's the short game. It's the putter that's really plagued him, but he can pop with the putter. We've seen it before. It wasn't that long ago. So again, I'm not super excited about playing Colin. Again, in this range, it's John Rahm and then move on for me. But I will have some lineups that start with Colin Morikawa because I don't see his ownership eclipsing 12%, probably in the 10% range.
The 9K range, which in major championships is always filled with riches, starts with Xander Schauffele, Patrick Cantlay, and Jordan Spieth. I have not seen Jordan Spieth here yet. That doesn't mean he's not here. I have just not seen him. And as of this moment, he is still technically in this field, obviously dealing with a wrist injury that we don't really know much about, but technically, as we record this, still in the field. Tony Finau, Justin Thomas, Cam Smith, Cam Young, Victor Hovland, Sung J.M. That is the $9,000 range, Sia. And after I rattle off those names, it's kind of easy to see why people might want to start their lineups here.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, Xander and Cantlay, they're appearing to be popular already for a reason. So I absolutely get that. By the way, I don't think Jordan Spieth, I have no inside info here. This is just me reading between the lines from the statement that, Rick, you read on this very show last Monday when we quoted it, and it was, you know, a week-to-week injury, and then there was some backpedaling off of that. To me, just knowing that statement, I don't think that was carefully crafted by his PR team, staff, what have you. I just don't think you're going to be ready a week later coming off of a statement like that with what was quoted as a severe like wrist something.
I also do not know anything additional, and I completely agree. I'm if you made me bet, I do not believe Jordan Spieth plays this week. I hope I'm wrong because it would be cool if he did, but I do not feel that way.
Yeah, I mean, just my whole thought is like, get the rest that you need. But to me, it could be like a 3 to 5 to 6 week thing. And then maybe we see him, you know, at the next major here. But I like Xander quite a bit. I mean, he's just one of those guys that's going to rate out really well. He's going to have the complete game. Weighted tee to green is awesome. Weighted approach is awesome. He's got enough distance, greens in regulation, the putter. There's really no criticism you can offer for him, which is why we're probably going to see his ownership. It's pretty high right now. I think it'll tick up a little bit by the time we get to lock, because I think people will lean on him as kind of more of a safe play with a really high floor. I'm okay with him. I'm okay starting your lineup with him. I'm okay having him in your lineup. If the ownership gets out of control with him and Cantlay, who I also like, I think I'm willing to construct my lineups a little differently, but Xander is one of my favorites in this range. I like Cantlay for similar reasons as I like Xander. He rates out super well. The other guy I'll mention in the 9K range, and Rick, I'm curious kind of to see whether you have some outliers beyond the three guys I'm mentioning, but I do like Sungjae. you know, not super long by any means, but more likely than not to keep it in the fairway. The weighted tee to green stuff is good. The short game in general, the putter, I like that. Off the tee, if you look at weighted off the tee, that rates out pretty good. So at 9,000, I think there's some value there.
Sungjae won last week. It was on the Korean PGA, but he won an event in which he was plus 275 to win, which would have been like Rom winning in Mexico. So Sungjae has a new trophy on the mantle, and he's going to tee it up with that new piece of equipment, new piece of trophy there. So yes, listen, the two guys you named are phenomenal in similar ways. They're both well-rounded. They both, can make par from seemingly anywhere. When conditions get difficult, they are going to pop up. I'm still wondering when we're going to get like what is Sungjae's ceiling, right? We saw him win Honda. We saw him win at TPC Summerlin. It feels like he contends much more, or his top tens are a bit empty with contention, which is something that we've said a lot about Xander Schauffele, but I don't bet Xander a lot. I will bet him this week. You know, this is such a good spot for him. I was out, I watched him play quite a bit today. I watched him work around the short game area. Everything looks pretty dialed. Everything looks pretty sharp. The tee to green numbers have been phenomenal. He has done nothing but pile up top 10 finishes in his last five starts. I mean, and you look at, I'll pull this up. Just like guys playing at major championships, you go back and you start looking at all the results of major championships in the last handful of years, and you're going to start to see a lot of the same names at the top of the leaderboard. And even guys that don't necessarily have a breakthrough victory at one of these, like Xander Schauffele, who is still looking for his first major championship, but you'll see his name up there constantly. And I'll just kind of show you here. So this is everybody in this field at the major championships dating back to 2008. Xander's played 86 rounds. He's gaining 1.86 per round. It's better than Jordan Spieth. It's better than John Rahm. It's better than Dustin Johnson. It's better than Jason Day. I mean, it's the fifth best in the field. So that concept for this week around this golf course feels really, really good to me.
Yeah. And I think he's probably kind of gotten rid of, even though he hasn't really been winning a ton, I think he's gotten rid of the narrative of like, well, he's good, but he's just not going to win the tournament. And I'm not saying that because he hasn't won. I'm saying that because he's contended so much. I mean, we've seen breakthroughs just this year with a couple of Jason Day last week, where I understand he's won before, but it's been a minute. I think we're at a point where we can kind of predict the next Xander win in terms of like, it's probably coming within the next 6 months, 3 months. And it wouldn't surprise me if he gets his breakthrough at the PGA Championship.
The other guy that is seemingly always kind of in it at major championships, a stroke and a half gain per round in 98 rounds, is Tony Finau. And, he checks off all the boxes for me this week. He is unlimited power off the tee. His second shot is dialed. The short game is plenty good enough. And, the thing that I was trying to use to put all of this into perspective is Tony has won four times since the last time he played a PGA championship, right? I mean, talking about shedding the concept of not being able to win, not being able to contend, whatever that might end up being, like, that's legit. And he's got a legit ceiling, and this golf course should be so, so good.
Yeah, and I'm seeing his ownership. It is ticking up to like a, sort of a uncomfortable territory, but it makes sense. Tony Finau in a major in the mid 9K range, he should be popular. What's interesting to me is that Justin Thomas is, again, not all ownership stuff is in, but it's funny that Justin Thomas is actually rivaling him, because between the two, if I see a heads-up matchup and it's Tony Finau versus Justin Thomas, which might be out there for all I know, I'm taking Tony Finau there pretty much every single time. So I think that's interesting. I'm really curious to see where Tony Finau, Xander Schauffele, and Patrick Cantlay end up on, like, let's say Wednesday night, Rick, in terms of their ownership. I think, not everybody can be super popular, but I think a lot of people are just going to end up on those guys. It wouldn't shock me if they're each in the, like, right around 20% range.
Where is the Cam Young, Victor Hovland love that we were promised? Right? Projected 9% on Monday. I thought everybody and their mom on January 1st bet Cam Young to win the PGA Championship. New York guy at Oak Hill, yada, yada. Like, where is that this week? Where's Victor Hovland, who drives it long and short? What happened? I was promised that these guys were going to be super popular.
It's interesting that for once, Hovland and Cameron Young are the pivots instead of the guys that you have to pivot off of. And really what that's coming from in Cameron Young's case is is I think there's a bit of Cameron Young fatigue, especially knowing that, you know, 59th at the Wells Fargo, 51st at the RBC Heritage, like those are not good finishes. Obviously seventh at the Masters, that's great. But yeah, I just think, and maybe people don't think, even though Cameron Young's a bomber, maybe they're just not really encouraged by the short game, much like Victor Hovland, where he's going to get that sort of, well, how's he going to be out of the bunkers? How's he going to be around the green in general? And I think that's really the big knock against Victor, but I'm okay with either of those guys. They weren't really initially on my radar, but if they're going to, they're going to get some ownership because we know how like pivoting works and all that. But if they're in the 12 to 13% range, I'm absolutely happy to play those guys.
Yeah, the bottom of the 9K range and the top of the eights is like a dead zone, which is absolutely going to get steamed. I cannot imagine a scenario in which one of these names, who I'll talk about in a second, is going at the current ownership. So we'll continue into the eights and we'll find some value on this board. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bull & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bull & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
And we're back. So the guy that I'm thinking about here, who I saw today, and Sia, I swear every time I see this guy, he looks like he's getting bigger, is Dustin Johnson, right? He just looks bigger every time I see him. Now 9 feet tall. He's at $8,800 and 6.3 projected ownership, coming off of a decent finish last week on LIV, and he's been playing well on LIV. And I don't know, man, hits it far, has a solid all-around game. Like, there's no way this guy doesn't catch Steve.
Agree with you, but I don't think it like gets anywhere like out of control, because I think especially with these LIV guys, people just don't know what to expect. Brooks gets the steam for a good reason because of how he showed out at the Masters, but I think Dustin Johnson, I think when it's all said and done, it's 10% or lower on him, 10, 11% at the most. That's my wow. Assumption here, especially because of the pricing, because of what you said about the high 8K dead zone, because people are going to want to take Rahm or Scotty or Rory. They might not, but if they don't, the next logical like form of building, I'm not saying it's the optimal form of building, but the next logical form of building is to take two 9K guys. And then that doesn't leave you much in terms of the high 8K range. It kind of leaves you in that sort of what is always a collection area, which is that low 7K range. And then you can kind of build back up to the high sevens and then go from there. But I don't think that one gets more than to 10, 11%, but I do think he's a pretty good play. I mean, I don't have a lot of faith in him, but just from a game theory standpoint, he makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, the dead zone is a really good way to put it, because that's kind of what we're seeing right now. So this $8,000 range is Jason Day, Dustin Johnson, Max Homa, Hideki, Terrell Hatton, Matt Fitzpatrick, Shane Lowry, Sam Burns, Sahith, Tom Kim, and Tommy Fleetwood. I will point out again, so the two guys who won last week on their respective tours, Dustin Johnson and Jason Day, both in this range, 89, 88. And obviously, as Sia mentioned earlier, the pricing came out before any of that happened. So there's going to be a little bit of built-in value there. But when you parse through the rest of this $8,000 range, what do you end up finding here?
I'll say this, if Jason Day doesn't, you know, get any steam, then I'm certainly going to be on him. I was, you know, I had a really good DFS week last week, but I wasn't actually on Jason Day very much at all. So
I saw you. I was scrolling up and I saw your username, and was it a 506 or something weird with it?
Well, what was weird with it is my worst player was Scottie Scheffler over the last 2 days. I was inside the top three, I believe, in the 75K long drive, that $100 single entry.
I saw you, yeah.
And what happened was Scottie Scheffler tied, I guess he's tied with a bunch of guys with like six holes to play, and he just wilted, and Jason Day and Marty Doe and a bunch of other guys just kind of like Ekrot just sailed past him. And so I ended up finishing 10th, which is great. But to be honest with you, if Scottie Scheffler won that tournament, I finished first or second. I didn't do the math. Definitely second. First place guy at Hatton had Day. Might have even had Siwoo somehow. But yeah, that's part of the reason when we opened the show in terms of the players, I was like, oh yeah, I'm on Rahm. I'm probably not going to be on Scotty. But I do believe in what I said about Rahm when it comes to the putter. I know you said you had your flag planted sort of on Scotty, but I think there might be some bias coming for me because I really expected him at least to maybe get to a playoff or finish second. And then, you know, he bungles like the 18th as well with another short missed putt, which actually ended up costing me a little bit as well. So anyway, it was a good tournament. But my point is, I didn't have Jason Day last week. Maybe I had him in one lineup that wasn't very good. So I'm happy to go back to him. Other 8K guys I like, I'm going right back to Tyrrell Hatton. Absolutely love him. He's certainly not a bomber by any means, but his distance is okay. Weighted approach, weighted off the tee, weighted tee to green. He really has all of sort of the elements. I have a couple other guys, but I wanted to get your opinion on Hatton because I'll tell you, I wrote an article for Sportsline last week. He was 55-1 at that time. It wasn't even the best number. And I was telling everybody in my article, I'm betting this number because I think Hatton has everything that it takes in terms of the all-around game to win this thing.
So the good news about this range is there's not really any like real bombers here, right? I mean, if you're talking about comparing him to his similarly priced peers, we've kind of gone past some of the elite bombers. And he's got, you know, this great long iron game, and he's been playing probably some of the best golf that he's played in the last couple of years, and it's been more well-rounded as of late. So, yeah, I certainly don't mind any of that. And when you think about hard golf courses, like where has he had his success? Well, he's obviously won at Bay Hill. You look at the fields that he's competed against, T3 at Quail Hollow against an elevated field, T19 at the RBC Heritage, elevated field players. He had a runner-up finish, API this year, T4. So, I mean, yeah, it makes perfect sense to give Terrell another go around.
Yeah, so he's one of maybe three guys I like. The other guy that I really like that I don't think I'm looking at ownership now is going to get a ton of attention. Well, he's getting a little bit actually, more than I thought at this hour on a Monday, is Matt Fitzpatrick. I mean, talk about a guy who's got the all-around game and clearly had to shake off an injury or something because it's the last three measured events where he is just been unbelievable. He can do everything. You know, the ball striking is back, off the tee it's back, and the putter, the short game, we know he has that, and that's been good as well. So I think that's actually pretty good value at 8400.
Yeah, certainly looking healthy since that neck injury at the start of the year, which, you know, kind of obviously derailed the start of 2023, but it does look like he is back on track. He gained six strokes on approach at the RBC Heritage where he won. You talk about well-rounded golfers. You talk about guys who are sneaky long. He's actually probably one of the longer guys in this range, averaging 306 off the tee. Sahith is a little bit longer, but very, very close. So yeah, he's certainly someone that catches my attention. I think just kind of removing myself from the situation, Max Homa at $8,700. I don't think I'll be playing a lot of him. I am just interested though, right? Like, what version of Max are we going to get? Are we going to get Max that eventually takes a step at a major championship and posts one of his best finishes, or are we going to get kind of another disappointing start? If you go back and look at major championship finishes and you sort this by salary, and when you get down to Max Homa, he's like the only guy who is over $7,000 that's played like three major championships that is losing to the field. I mean, it's been shocking what he's done. So I don't think I'll be investing in him. I don't think it's a particularly great golf course for him, but I just someone that I am curious to see what happens come Sunday evening.
He's interesting. I think that his name is going to be mentioned enough where he is going to pick up some ownership, but it's not going to be prohibitive in any way. He's definitely going to be one of the lower guys, in my opinion, in this range. I think, you know, the Wells Fargo was encouraging. He did a lot of that with the short game, which is not a criticism because he's going to have to do that here as well. But it was a lot of the around the green and putting that really worked out for him. Off the tee, he was good. Approach, he was very average there. But I think he's interesting as a potential pivot off some other guys, or at least just to have in your build because he's not going to get a lot of ownership. Another guy you mentioned that I think is interesting because he's just going to get squeezed. I'm surprised his ownership is as high as it is. I think Sahith is really interesting. Another guy that's like, by the way, I like Fleetwood right under him, but I think there's a lot of guys in that high 7K, low 8K range that people are really going to want to play, and Sahith is not necessarily one of them. So I think he's a really interesting pivot with plenty of upside, certainly inconsistent But if nobody's going to play him, I'll probably be gambling on him.
He could be effectively wild this week. The idea that he can miss by 40 yards as long as he misses it in the correct direction, and the way that they removed so many of these trees, like that will, that'll open up some sight lines that we have not seen around Oak Hill before. So he could be effectively wild as long as he's not finding Allen's Creek, as long as he's not finding fairway bunkers. If he's actually even more wild than the fairway bunkers, I could actually see him getting away with it.
Yeah, I could see it. Again, he's not a high confidence play for me, but you know, if I'm playing several lineups, he's going to make it in one because I think he's got plenty of upside.
The seventh starts with Corey Connors and Joaquin Niemann, goes all the way down to Lucas Herbert, Mito Pereira, Phil Mickelson, amongst others. There are a lot of live golfers in this range, Sia, that we probably want to talk about. But where are we spending our dollars here?
I'll mention like five or six guys really quickly. And then maybe, Rick, you can tell me if you hate any of my plays here. One I don't think is going to be very popular, as I nervously scroll up to confirm that, yeah, he's not popular at all. Listen, I get the idea that you want bombers, and I get the idea that nobody's really going to be in the fairway, but that's an absolute that's actually not true, right? There are going to be some people that hit it from the fairway on a somewhat...
No. There is literally no fairway on the golf course.
There's no fairway. It's all rough. Man, PGA champ. That's crazy. Corey Connors. I just think he is a play that's going to go overlooked. I looked at the weighted tee to green. I looked at the weighted off the tee, weighted approach, greens in regulation, two top tens over his last, I believe, four tournaments, including a win at the Valero. Again, ball striking immaculate. And the putter, he's gained with the putter, as we can see here, in four out of the last five. I just think he's one of those guys that's not a sexy play, much like kind of like Matt Fitzpatrick, not a super sexy play. But I think he can do some damage here. I mean, he could wilt and be nothing, but he's in the 7K range, and I actually think he has some upside here.
Well, he has been phenomenal off the tee as usual. The approach play solid continually. He was a little bit better at the Wells Fargo in the short game category. So if he can hold it together there, you think he gives himself a pretty decent shot of running up the leaderboard, being in contention, being in the mix. But he's got to hold it together there. The rest of his game is stout.
Yeah, I mean, in this range, if Connors can top 20 here, then I'm pretty happy about where I landed with him. Another guy that I'll name four other guys, but one is so interesting to me, so I'm going to actually wait to name him. Ricky Fowler, I do like weighted tee to green, weighted approach, got enough distance, putter. I think that's great value on Ricky Fowler. Wyndham Clark, listen, we've been on Wyndham Clark this entire year. Absolutely love him. 7,500. I understand this is a different field, but I think there's great value there. Same stuff, weighted tee to green, weighted approach, the putter. That's going to come in handy here. And I think Clark is great there.
If you've been playing Wyndham Clark for the last 6 months, like we have, you can't stop now. Right. I mean, it's a great price for a guy who has always been long, is now a great approach player, and has a great short game. The exact things that this golf course is going to ask of you. So you reward Wyndham Clark and thank him for all the returns that he has given us. And even if he misses the cut, you're cool with it because like you are still way up on Wyndham Clark if you've been paying attention for the last 4 months.
Well, what's interesting is that he's 7,500 here, and I literally hit him at 7,500 plus 7,500 just 2 weeks ago. And honestly, before that, the reason I liked Wyndham Clark there and the reason I liked him even a month or two before that is because it's the classic scenario of a guy that's on the ascent, but we're not exactly sure where the peak is going to be. And then he wins and we're like, oh, I guess that's the peak. Well, maybe it's not actually, you know what I mean? In this loaded field, maybe we see Wyndham Clark, you know, inside the top 10 or the top 12. I think that's very realistic for him. It's also realistic that he doesn't do well, but that's golf. That's going to be anybody on this board. Two other guys, Woodland, I think is interesting. The putter's horrible, but obviously all of the ball striking metrics are going to speak to the fact that Woodland has a lot of upside if he can find the putter. The last guy, this is the guy that I think is really interesting, Rick. What, other than around the green being bad for this guy, what is Taylor Moore? Because I'm looking at this guy and I'm like, this looks like the profile of an elite talent, and we're just not there yet with him. I don't know if this is a mirage to some degree, and in a major, it's just going to kind of go away, or if the around the green is going to catch up to him, but this speaks to me.
I actually wrote him up for my newsletter that's going to go out tomorrow. He's been phenomenal. He drives it well. He's strong. He's fit. He's playing phenomenal golf. Since the start of January 1st, he's like the 12th best player in the world, something like that, in terms of strokes gained. He does it in a way that you generally like. Yeah, might he spend a couple around the greens? He might. Saw him on the range today, looked in very good spirits, looked loose, looked like he was ready to rock and roll. It's only going to be a second major championship. You know, he got into the Masters thanks to that win at the Valspar. And it was like 2 weeks later, he had to play in his first major. And like, I wonder if there is a little bit more comfortability knowing that you've been in this field for a lot longer and this isn't your first go around. So yeah, I'm quite bullish on Taylor Moore. I was actually, I was only kind of joking when I was typing in Bryson's name earlier, because I'll tell you what, Bryson's been horrible. Don't get me wrong, but we got his best live finish ever last week at Tulsa. And there is going to be a lot of winged foot in this golf course. And he is so ungodly cheap now. He is $7,400. This is one of those, like, you try to get in, you try to get out, you try to time the market on Bryson. This is the only spot. It's the only spot. Everything else is horrible, but this is feeling very winged footy out here.
I guess the question becomes, because he's going to be low owned and that makes him a pretty solid game theory play. The question becomes, everybody next to him is low owned as well. So you have to start doing sort of that 1v1 thing. Do you want to play Bryson and his potential upside, or do you want to play Cam Davis? And the same conversation for Denny, Dietrich. I think Grillo is actually in the conversation here as well.
Yeah, I'd probably take Davis over him. I would take Clark over him. I would probably take Bryson over Denny. Dietrich and Bryson is very, very close. I'd probably have to take Dietrich. I would take Bryson over Brandon Todd. Emiliano's interesting. Yeah, so I mean, you're right. It's not that simple of like he's, you know, clearly mispriced or clearly the pivot or anything like that.
And I'll say this, Rick, any of those guys we just mentioned, including Bryson, are great pivots off of Clark, because the secret's out on Clark, right? We see it here. He's 12%. That could climb to 13, 14%, maybe probably not to 15% because the 7K range is so rich. But, you know, if you're going to get a Bryson who I'm not playing, but let's say a Grillo who I am playing, by the way, at 1/4 the ownership of like a Wyndham Clark, like that's obviously a pretty good pivot. And I think at least Bryson's in that conversation from a pivot standpoint.
Anybody else in the 7K worth discussing? You know, you get some elite skill sets like Keith Mitchell and the way that he drives it. I don't think there was anybody else that I particularly needed to mention here. We basically hit the guys that I was thinking of.
Yeah, you know, Harris English has been playing a lot better. You know, he's certainly not super long by any means, but that doesn't mean we need to rule him out. I think he's interesting because of his price at 7,200. I mean,
yeah, he's been playing a lot better. This is also like a good Northeast setup for him on bent. Like this could go pretty well for Harris English, honestly.
Are you in or out on Gary Woodland?
In, but I don't encourage you to track his shot by shot for this week, right? I saw his number as long as 125-1, past major champion who is ball striking the hell out of it, has the distance to remove some of the bunkers out of play. But like, dude, he is god awful with the putter. It's horrible. But I'm more in than I'm out for sure.
I got to ask you about two other guys. I was going to make it three, but I don't think we need to talk too much about Abraham Answer here. But Joaquim Niemann from LIV, 7,900, who is interesting. I believe I played him at the Masters. I think it went pretty well. Taylor Gooch at 7,600. But was I wrong? Was it Gooch that was getting boxed out of this tournament, or was it this major, or was it a different major? All that news from last week with Phil Mickelson and whatnot.
Got boxed out of the U.S. Open, I believe. So he needs to play well here to get into the U.S. Open is essentially what it comes down to.
Gotcha. Any interest in either of those guys?
Vague interest, right? I think on the surface, Niemann is a lot longer than he looks. You know, there was a time when on the PGA Tour where he was like, you know, top 15 in distance and he got a lot of roll and stuff like that. I think he's been fine. I don't think he's been great. Gooch has been much better. Obviously, the back-to-back wins on LIV and then didn't play particularly well in Tulsa. That could be a lot of things. It could be, hey, I'm at home and it's expectations. Hey, golf is weird. Hey, it could be literally a bunch of stuff. But vaguely interested in both. I don't think either of them are going to be super great, I'd probably prefer Neiman over Gooch, honestly.
Yeah, I agree with you. I might have a share or two of Neiman just as in a dart throw oriented contest, but certainly nobody I'm leaning on.
The $6,000 range. Sean McKeel is the mid price. Aaron Wise, Adam Hadwin, Bo Hostler, Matt Kuchar, amongst others, at $6,900. Let's round out the value portion of the show.
Even though the metrics aren't great, some of them are. Weighted off the tee, putting's pretty good for Bo Hostler. I just kind of believe in this guy a little bit. And again, the metrics aren't going to speak to us too much, but the way he's been playing as of late, he's made five cuts in a row for whatever that's worth. I think he's interesting at 6,900.
He's pretty long too.
Exactly. Longer than most people think for sure. And that's part of the reason that weighted off the tee number looks pretty good for him. A couple other names. I think HV3 is interesting just to speculate upon. I mean, he wouldn't be in like a main lineup of mine, but because I just don't have enough information. But I think at 6,600, I'd be okay playing him. Adam Svensson can flash here and there across all metrics. He's just been really kind of inconsistent, but he has made the cut in seven of his last eight. So I think that's interesting. And I'll give you two more names. Buckley, I do like. Weighted off the tee, solid. Distance, solid. Ball striking, excellent. It's just the around the green game isn't super, it's pretty bad with him. And the last name I'll mention is Ryan Fox at 6,500. Great off the tee, inconsistent on approach. Short game can be up and down, but I think there's, at least in terms of making the cut, I think there's some upside with all those guys, but particularly Fox at 6,500. That's a pretty nice price for a guy that I think has a good shot to make the cut.
Yeah, I watched Buckley for a bit today. He looked fine. You're right. It's just, you know, that it's the short game stuff that really starts to worry you a little bit. The names that stood out to me here were just raw course fit would be somebody like Taylor Pendrith and his ability to move the ball and have that club head speed that's going to be required throughout the course. The pure pedigree would be Yannick Paul, who's played phenomenal on the DP World Tour. He's now the top 100 player in the world. He's going to be 2% owned at $6,800. That's kind of interesting.
And then shout out real quick to the Outlaw Tour when COVID started. Yannick and his brother, who was the other Paul?
Jeremy Paul.
Those were guys I was legitimately jamming into my DFS lineup during the initial portions of COVID.
Yes. I mean, think Yannick Paul went from basically that COVID, the 1800th ranked player in the world, to now he's like 103rd. He's a winner on the DP World Tour. It's been a good run for him. We are getting really good signs of life for Matthew Neesmith again. It was 4 months of slump. We've seen this happen before. Guy gets with a friend at Zurich. They play well. Sees the ball go in and it sparks something. And now he gained 6 strokes on approach to Wells Fargo. He gained 3.7 in the ball striking categories. In the ball striking categories at the Wells Fargo. And he gained 3.7 at the Byron Nelson. Top 30s in both of them. There was a time not that far long ago where he was one of the best approach players in the world. And we are starting to get signs of life of that again, and he's like $6,200. He's like $6,300, very, very cheap. He is actually being priced with some of the PGA club pros, which is obviously not fair.
I actually like that quite a bit. Are we in that range? Is Jimmy Walker, who I think drives it a little longer than people think, is he in the conversation at all?
I don't know what secret serum Jimmy Walker has found. I don't know how, there is just no world in which I invest in Jimmy Walker, right? I think his upside is capped. I think this is a pretty bad spot for him. He has been super reliant on the short game. If he continues to, but he's been doing that for 6 or 7 straight starts. If he does it an eighth in a row at the PGA Championship, I'll continue to tip my cap to Jimmy Walker all the way until he wins, 5 tournaments in a row. But I just do not see a scenario with this version of Jimmy Walker and me being involved in it.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I certainly would rather go with Naismith than Jimmy Walker there, but I think he's at least interesting. Again, he hits the ball further than people think.
Yeah. Anybody else? Going once, going twice.
I don't think so. Brandon Steele is interesting to me at the very least.
Yeah, I agree with that. Do we have narrative lineups this week? I've been like very much out of pocket.
No, we should have, I think, around four.
Okay. Troy, do we have them?
Pretty sure I sent them. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Here we go. So narrative lineups. This is a fun way for us to cap the show, where people submit lineups based on any narrative that they want, and they're usually pretty fun. And we have a nice core group of submitters here. So Ryan at Fantasy Bunker. Oh, his hometown is Rochester. Very good. Nearby Niagara Falls is one of the most photographed places in the world. That is true. In fact, Victor Hovland himself was at Niagara Falls last night photographing it. So there you go. Adding to the collection. So here are some other highly photographed places. The Great Wallace of China. Stonehenge, Fina. KH Leaning Tower of Pisa. Roman Colosseum. Marc de Triomphe Hubbard. And the Eiffel Mikkelsen Tower. Pretty good, Ryan.
Yeah.
The Monomaniac is nuts about Oak Hill, obviously, aren't we all? So he has put together a collection of nuts. Taylor All Montgomery, Patrick Picantley, great one, Jordan Spistachio, Jimmy Walnut, that one's easy, Robert Macadamia Nut, and Corey Coconut. Well done. All the nuts for the Model Maniac. What else we got, Troy? All right. Brent says, okay, yes. So I guess Kodak, the film company, and I guess camera company, is famous here and I guess started here. So he says, Kodak's historic ties with Rochester used to be a Dow stock. Like Oak Hill, the Dow has been renovated. So a strokes gained lineup of former Dow Jones PGA Tour companies. Am I understanding that right?
I think that's what COS means. Yeah, I think.
Rory Mack Truxell Roy. So Mack Trucks would be the former Dow company. Tony Finau Furniture Brands International.
They're just trying to mess you up at this point, Rick. It's a game to them.
Shame Lowe's Re Cineplex. RCA Fowler. C. Woolworth Company, and U.S. Brendan Steele.
You got to be of a certain age to know Woolworths.
Yeah, that is going to be over a lot of our younger audience, but well done. Brent, and then John Markowski says, trees removed from Oak Hill equals changing of course dynamics. Remove tree. Oh boy.
Oh good luck, boy. Buddy.
Remove tree from golfers' names, scramble it up, and the names get even more dynamic. Okay. So we removed tree, or John removed tree from Patrick Reed and got Dick Parr. He removed tree from Lucas Herbert and is now Cal Brush. Dean Burmeister becomes Bean Drums. Robert McIntyre becomes Marty Corbin. Brendan Steele becomes Ned Bleens. And Mito Pereira becomes Mario Pie. This is like when you have, when you're famous and you have like an alter ego that you use to check into hotels with.
That's right. You must have done that today, Rick, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I'm going by Cal Brush now.
I'm going as Bean Drums.
Bean Drums, yes. So if you see a Cal Brush out there, you know it's me. Very cool. All right, well done, everybody. Good, fun way to end it. See ya. Anything else before we get out of town?
Well, I was about to toss that back to you because you're going to be on the grounds for the next few days before we tee this thing up. And yes. I'm excited to see what you tweet out, what you guys have on the mega preview tomorrow, because I just think it's cool to quote – is there another phrase for boots on the ground? Because I hate saying that over and over again.
How about heels in the grass? How about we could coin something?
That's good. Heels in the grass. Heels in the rough. Rick's got his heels in the rough. I like that.
Yeah.
All right, we're going with that.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. So what is interesting? So Mondays are always really weird, right? Because it's a lot of these guys' first time seeing it. So things where they're struggling with, and these guys are incredible at making adjustments very, very quickly. So I'll be interested to see how they do out of the rough on Tuesday, how they do out of the sand on Tuesday and Wednesday, right? Just like how quickly they can make adjustments. So yeah, it'll be really cool to track, and I will obviously do my best.
I love it. Can't wait.
All right. Mega Preview Pod Tuesday, in which we will unveil the one and done selections, which, by the way, the fan vote link is in the description. Sorry, shouldn't have waited until the last 30 seconds to tell you that. Also, we will do round by round recaps, which will be available pretty much everywhere. And we'll figure out how that's going to look for this week. Big thanks, producer Troy, doing all the hard work behind the scenes today. Sian Ajad available on Twitter at Sian Ajad. You can find me at Rick Brent Good. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.
Streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls.
Rated PG-13.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.